Julie Burstein. I'm here for Leonard Lopate. This morning, as I got ready for the day, my normal routine suddenly felt a little dangerous because I'd just read the book No More Dirty Looks. I eyed my shampoo with suspicion, washed my face with a little trepidation, and wondered what was in the soap, and nervously put on the sunscreen that I slather on every morning because now I have a better glimpse of what's actually inside all of these seemingly innocuous preparations. And a lot of the time, it's not very pretty. In No More Dirty Looks, authors Siobhan O'Connor and Alexandra Spunt reveal the truth about the cosmetics that many of us use on a daily basis. Many contain ingredients that are considered toxins and chemicals that have the potential to harm the people who are exposed to them. The authors explain why these products are so dangerous and provide healthy alternatives. The book is published by DaCapo Lifelong Books, and I am pleased to welcome Siobhan O'Connor to the studio here and Alexandra Spunt by phone from Montreal to the show today. Welcome.
Thanks for having us, Julie.
Hi.
How did you both become interested in this topic?
Well, as the book sort of starts out by explaining, we went for a hair treatment together called the Brazilian Blowout. Something we'd heard was supposed to be good for our hair, and Siobhan lives in New York, I live in Los Angeles, so we always like doing these sort of girly things together. And
spa, do something that, right.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
But this one was not so pretty, sounds like.
Turns out not so much. We went, as Alexandra said, thought it was a keratin hairstyling treatment. That's, one of the main proteins in our hair. So we thought, that sounds great. But then as soon as we sort of sat down in these cushy leather chairs in a lovely West Hollywood salon, they started flat ironing a solution onto our hair that made our eyes burn and made us start coughing. They gave us protective goggles at one point. But to be quite honest, we didn't really think that much about it, because we were really excited about our hair. And it turns out our hair looked great. And then within a couple weeks, we started thinking something doesn't seem quite right. So off to Google we went. And then we went down the rabbit hole. It was just sort of one thing led to another. We found out that the active ingredient wasn't keratin at all. It was formaldehyde, which is a known carcinogen.
And sort of, it was like they were pickling your hair, or preserving your hair.
Exactly.
Like the pigs.
Embalming our hair.
Right, in biology class.
Yes.
Lovely, lovely.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was just the tip of the iceberg, though. As soon as you started investigating, it sounds like you found out that this is not just these special hair treatments.
Yeah, well, we just didn't understand when we discovered that it was formaldehyde. We were like, well, how can that be legal? How can that even be possible? And so, like Siobhan said, we started Googling, and then we realized that the industry is more or less what they call self-regulated.
Had either of you investigated scientific issues before you went into this investigation?
Not at all, no. I have a background as a journalist and an editor, and I'd worked on a lot of environmental stories, but this was like a totally new kind of kettle of fish. And it was really daunting. We really wanted to make sure that we got the science right, and that's really difficult to do when you don't have a background as a science writer. And it took us a while before we had access to, where toxicologists would return our calls, because we're just sort of like two girls investigating stuff. It was hard to get people to take it seriously at first. Then we ended up teaming up with these fantastic experts who really walked us through it and, made sure our research was more or less bulletproof. I'm sure there are errors in the book, but yeah.
Sometimes science tries to be understandable, but with these products, it seems like there is a lot of work that goes into keeping us from understanding exactly what's in these products.
Well, absolutely, yeah. I think the industry as a whole sort of trades on that confusion. If you look at the most honest thing about any product we use is the ingredient list, right? Flip the bottle and read the ingredients. It's like, what are these things?
Well, you
we
joke at one point you have to take out your loupe to read the ingredients
exactly.
list, and like you're looking at a diamond, which is absolutely true. I sometimes think I need extra strength glasses to be able to read this 2-point type.
It's very confusing, yeah.
Unless you have a background in science, there's no way to really know what those ingredients are, because they always use a scientific naming. So it gets really confusing for consumers, and we were really confused.
I'm speaking with Alexandra Spunt and Siobhan O'Connor. They are the authors of No More Dirty Looks from DaCapo Lifelong Books. We're going to be taking your calls in a few minutes, too, at 212-433-9692 if you have questions about what might be in your cosmetics or your shampoo or your sunscreen. When you were looking at this, did you have an expectation, oh, this is the product that's going to be the ickiest? Or did you just go into it thinking, we're just going to find out what's out there?
I feel like every time we researched a new product, it seemed worse than the last one. Like, we couldn't believe it. We wrote a lot of the book together online, so we would be on sort of, you know, instant messenger and such. And every day, one of us was having a complete freak out about some new thing we'd discovered. In
the oh my God moment,
yes.
Did you know?
OMG, big
yes.
time.
Can you tell us a little bit? I would say one of the things that surprised me the most was sunscreen, which is something I use, I put on my kids. I think, oh, okay, this must be something that is at least not bad for us. But from your research, it sounds like I'm not entirely correct.
I think, yeah, for a couple decades now, we've all been told that we have to put this stuff on ourselves every day. It's in all our makeup. You know, even like a basic foundation now has SPF 15. And what we're learning is that a lot of the chemical sunscreens that are used, like oxybenzone, avobenzone, are potential suspected hormone disruptors. So these are things that get into our body and they trick our bodies into thinking that there's more estrogen than there is, for example. And, you know, if you look at the data, I think it's 97% of us have this and had this in our urine. And then on the flip side, you have physical blockers such as zinc oxide and titanium dioxide, which in their, you know, as a topical, as long as it's not migrating into your skin, if it's not a nanoparticle, it does a great job blocking out the sun. It's skin friendly and it's not carcinogenic. So
it sounds like choosing your product is the important thing, that there are chemical blockers, the oxybenzone, and those are the ones to stay away from.
Yeah.
But the zinc and the titanium, as long as, and talk a little bit about nanoparticles. Alexandra, maybe you can talk about this. Siobhan just said, as long as they're not nanoparticles.
Yeah, well, this is a very new, a very fast-growing, and a very confusing category. Basically, nanoparticles means tiny, 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 tiny little particles that are actually being shown to penetrate skin more easily and sometimes to drag in other chemicals as they're penetrating. Basically, at this point, there's no real regulation on nanoparticles. Products in the U.S. don't even have to say that they contain nanoparticles. But we kind of just recommend that people avoid them in general at this point because there's not enough research done to be sure that this is really something that's safe to use.
Well, I'm speaking with Siobhan O'Connor and Alexandra Spunt about their book, No More Dirty Looks. It's from DaCapo Lifelong Books, and we're taking calls. And I think I'd like to go to Evan in Danbury. Evan, you have a question for the authors.
Hi. I just had a question about products like Dr. Bronner's or Burt's Bees. Are those as bad as the more mainstream products like, you know, Head and Shoulders and Herbal Essence and stuff? You know, they're marketed as healthier, but I'm just curious. That's what I use and would like to know.
And Siobhan, I see you're laughing here.
Yeah, so. I think Dr. Bronner's is one of the cleanest products on earth.
Yeah.
It doesn't get better than that. It doesn't get simpler than that. And what's amazing about Dr. Bronner's is you can use it for so many things. You can clean your toilet with it. You can wash your face. You can wash your baby. And you can wash your dishes and just trust that if any of it gets inside of you, you will be perfectly fine.
And you don't need to read what's on the outside in order to be able to use what's inside.
Well, yeah, that's a wild bottle.
I remember that from my college days that people would be using that and it's like, you'd see it in somebody's bathroom and think, are they being evangelized or are they getting clean? What's going on here?
Right.
You say you could actually eat it. I mean, that's an interesting point in that I looked at the kinds of things that you were talking about in the book, and I would never eat something with those things on it, but I put it on my skin. How does the skin deal with these things in terms of how it affects us?
Yeah, well, I think that was such a huge disconnect for us, and that was the big aha moment when we realized that what goes on our skin actually gets into our bodies. By some accounts, up to 60% of what we put on our skin gets inside of our bodies. And for some reason, not everyone is thinking about that, and that's why we really have to start looking at products in a similar way that we would look at food.
And you write about the skin as an organ, which I think is something a lot of us forget, that in a sense it's our largest organ.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about the nicotine patch, which is our favorite example, that's a very effective way of getting a drug into your body by, you know, slapping it onto your arm. And it's an organ that absorbs and it also eliminates. So, yeah.
Let's go to another question. We have Elizabeth in Manhattan. I think, Elizabeth, you have a question about a particular ingredient. I don't know whether our guests will know, but what's your question, Elizabeth?
Hi. I found it in a lot of shampoo. It's, I believe, DM Hydantin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a preservative that is considered what they call a formaldehyde donor, which is a very sort of gentle way of saying that it has the potential to release formaldehyde, which is a carcinogen, into the product. So you won't see formaldehyde on the ingredient list, but it can leach into the product on the shelf.
Formaldehyde donor, that is just such a kind of polite way of saying something. You would, it's a little innocuous.
Yeah, euphemistic, to say the least.
So is that something that better off avoided?
Absolutely, yeah.
Definitely avoid that one. It's on our top 20 list of ones to avoid.
I'm speaking with Alexandra Spunt and Siobhan O'Connor about No More Dirty Looks from DaCapo Lifelong Books. And we are taking your calls at 212-433-9692. You know, lists on the radio are never the best thing, but it would be interesting to hear if you could give a brief note about each of your top 20 or at least your top 10.
Yeah, I can give you a few of them. We definitely have formaldehyde on there, but then, as we just covered, there are also formaldehyde releasers, so that gets a little bit confusing when you're checking your labels.
And is parabens, formaldehyde in most things? It is in particular kinds of things?
Well, it's in a variety of things. It's in nail polish often, but sometimes it's, you know, released in the DMDM in something like bubble bath or shampoo. So the problem with there's intended ingredients, which is what we actually see on the label, and then there's byproducts, and then there's contaminants.
Mm-hmm.
So these are sort of the loophole where it's hard to know exactly what's in your product, even if you could read the ingredient labels.
So formaldehyde is number one, and you said paraben is the next one?
Yeah, parabens, fragrance is another thing that we tell people to avoid because fragrance is protected under trade secret laws, so it will appear on your ingredients just as the word fragrance, but really that's another 10, 20, 30 mystery ingredients that we don't know about, and lab studies have shown that often what's in fragrance is not something that you would want in your body.
You have quite a powerful story about a woman who found herself not able to breathe. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, that was Betty Bridges, a nurse that we interviewed. And her story was so amazing because she developed this sensitivity, and it took her something like 8 years to figure out what the actual ingredient she was allergic to was because of these trade secret laws.
So formaldehyde, parabens, fragrance. What's next?
I think anything containing phthalates should be of concern. This is another example.
Which starts with a P, not
a
T.
It starts with a P. Yes. They're big in the news right now, along with BPA. And it's another tricky ingredient, unfortunately, because it's not always listed on labels in ways that are easy to find. But what we do know is that they're in a lot of fragrance. And phthalates are categorically hormone disruptors. And, you know, even the American Endocrine Society has released a report saying, you know, we should be very, very concerned about this. So we're talking about major, you know, medical organizations saying, watch out.
Before we get to the rest of the list, let's take a couple more calls. Yvonne in Park Slope, you have a question about scrubs.
Yes. Good afternoon. I have found going through the brands that you find commonly in drugstores that it's almost impossible to find a facial scrub that doesn't have polyethylene plastic beads. And when I wrote the Department of Environmental Protection, they were kind of vague and basically said that we don't really know exactly what it is. It's under investigation. It gave me another department to write to, which, to be honest, I haven't done yet. But the impression I get is that if it's under investigation, it's being under investigation after it's on the market, and it should have been investigated before it was on the market. Because if the water filtering system, which is what I read online, but, you know, I don't know whether that was true or not, which was why I was calling everybody and writing everybody, if what I read online is true, the watering system isn't set up to filter out all these products, that these high-tech products.
So that you're concerned not just for yourself, but
no,
also
I'm
for the environment.
About the water. It was wonders on my skin, and which is why I Googled it and said, oh, finally I found something that worked.
Well, Alexandra and Siobhan, I know you have some notes in the book about scrubs and about the idea of whether we actually need them, although I think, Yvonne, a lot of people like you find them very, very useful.
Well, I was finding that the so-called natural scrubs with crushed-up nutshells and that kind of thing, I'm African-American, and I find that my skin bruises easily, gets little growths and all sorts of stuff, and these polyethylene beads supposedly are smoother.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely are. The things that they use as sort of natural ingredients can definitely like, scrape your skin in a way that you definitely don't want to be doing. One thing you could try is just baking soda or sugar, sugar and salt with some oils. I mean, I use that on my body about once a week, and I love it. It feels fantastic.
You note, though, that that's probably not the best for faces.
I definitely don't think. But Alexandra and I both come from we've grown into this school of, like, leave your face alone. So it does feel great to scrub, but we're both sort of anti-scrub at this point.
Can you do talk about that in the book. Can you talk about that a little bit? Why anti-scrub?
I think that we just realized that part of the sort of scam, for lack of a better word, of the cosmetics industry is this idea that we need so many things, that we need to do so many things to our bodies. So in the last 10 or 15 years, things like peels and scrubs have gotten really popular. You know, they make your face sort of glow at first, and people think that they can sort of get rid of really fine lines. But what you're doing is you're taking off a top layer of skin that's extremely protective, that holds in moisture in your skin. And over the long term, it's kind of our feeling that maybe it's not the best idea, that our bodies are these sort of incredible machines, and that top layer of a little bit of sebum that keeps the moisture in actually might be something we want to keep. That said, when I'm really craving a scrub, I actually really do like mixing a little bit of baking soda into, either mix it into your face wash or just on its own with some water. It shouldn't be too harsh on the skin.
This gets to another point which I found fascinating, which is you have a lot of recipes in your book, and it sounds like the two of you have tried them out on yourself. How did you come up with these recipes, and what are your favorites?
Some of it was just kind of experimenting, sort of saying like, oh, what would happen if we did X or Y? Alexandra's definitely more kind of experimental in the kitchen/bathroom than I am, so maybe she can speak to this.
I feel like, what did we do? We looked things up online. You know, there's great resources online of much more extensive recipes than we have in the book. Our sort of idea was, let's include a few really basic DIY solutions. Especially, it's a great way to save money. You know, like the body scrub that Siobhan was talking about that she makes from sugar and olive oil and vanilla extract. You know, those are things you have in your kitchen. You don't really need to go spend $40 on a super expensive body scrub. We kind of encourage people to spend their money more on their face or on makeup or things that they're really going to love. And so these are kind of great ways to save in some cases. And some of them are just really effective.
There's also something. One of my kids had terrible eczema when he was little, and mostly what I was told to put on it was basically putting an oil slick on him. And we ended up just taking extra virgin olive oil, and when he took a bath afterwards, we would just rub him down with
Fantastic.
Extra virgin olive oil. He smelled like a salad, but he felt much better.
Right.
And people looked at me strangely when he would walk down the street smelling like extra virgin olive oil. But is that the sort of thing that you're playing with too, is just what you've got and what?
Absolutely. Yeah. If I make a salad and I sort of like toss it with my hands and I'm like rubbing it on my forearms, it feels great.
I am speaking with Siobhan O'Connor and Alexandra Spunt about their new book, No More Dirty Looks, just out from Da Capo Press. We'll continue taking your calls here at 212-433-9692 after we take a little break.
I'm Julie Burstein. I'm here for Leonard Lopate today, and I am speaking with Siobhan O'Connor and Alexandra Spunt. They have a new book, No More Dirty Looks, from DaCapo Lifelong Books, and we are taking your calls at 212-433-9692. Let's get right to callers. We are going to speak to Anne in Westchester. Anne, you have a question about mineral products.
Yes. In many of the beauty stores like Sephora, they have big signs about these all-natural products, such as Bare Minerals, I believe, which has titanium dioxide and zinc oxide, I think, as the main ingredients, although I'm not really sure.
That's right.
And I'm just wondering, are those really healthy alternatives to the other foundations? You know, so like Clinique or whatever you would buy, you know, Maybelline, whatever it is that you would buy elsewhere? That's
one
question.
We found that the basic Bare Minerals one, just the powder, was a pretty clean list. When you get into sort of eyeshadows and other things, I believe that's different. But the main product from Bare Minerals was pretty clean, and there's some other good mineral makeups out there, and those are the ones that also double as a good sunblock because they contain the zinc and the titanium dioxide.
And also, speaking of sunblock, when you go to the dermatologist, they now suggest that you get a product that has Helioplex in it. And so I pulled off my shelf the Neutrogena sunblock with Helioplex because apparently the other product, what they previously sold, didn't protect the rays from penetrating. And I do see that it has oxybenzone, which I think you mentioned before is one of the no-nos.
Yeah.
So what kind of sunblock, I mean, it is so important to wear sunblock. What can you wear?
There are a lot of really good ones out there now. Unfortunately, depending on where you live, I mean, the selection at Whole Foods is fantastic. There are a bunch of things online that you can find. The active ingredients that we really recommend you look for are titanium dioxide and zinc oxide in a cream as well. So mineral makeup, fantastic, but also in a cream. And you just want to make sure you look at the rest of the ingredient list as well. Because even with things that have titanium and zinc in them, you can find other things in there as well that maybe aren't super super healthy ingredients.
So how do you read the ingredients? What would you recommend we look for when we're thinking about a shampoo or a sunscreen? You pick it up, you look at the box, you get the stronger glasses, and then what do you look for?
Words you recognize is a good place to start.
So that's something you'd want, is words you recognize.
Words you recognize, yeah.
Sort of like the advice,
as long
not
as those
to
words
eat anything.
DM, hide end.
There's also, you know, we say in the book, if you're the type of person who, you know, wants to get serious in that way and read the ingredients list and maybe use an online resource like the Cosmetic Safety Database and actually look everything up, that's amazing. We totally encourage that. That's what we did. But if you're a little bit lazy for that or it seems like a headache, I mean, this was part of the reason why we wrote the book, but if you just start finding some brands that you trust, then you can sort of relax a little bit and know, you know, that you can always choose from those 10 or 20 brands.
We have a question on our show page. Fred asked, any advice on deodorant? And I know from your web page, you note that deodorant is a tough one.
It's the hardest one.
The hardest
excited
one.
Excited question.
It's the hardest one.
Why is it the hardest one? What is it that's in there, and what is it that we want, that we need to look for?
Well, the active in most deodorants or antiperspirants is aluminum, which we don't want to be telling people to use. And then you also will find things like triclosan, which is an antibacterial agent that, you know, has the EPA and the FDA on watch. It's a really problematic ingredient as well. So
not just for us, but also for the environment.
Especially for the environment. These things are, this is tricky, and we tried a lot. And I mean, the best we can say, different things work for different people. The best thing we can say is just sort of like try and don't give up. Alexandra got creative with some baking soda and like a powder brush. And, you know, that works for some people.
And how did that work out, Alexandra?
It worked pretty well. The thing with naturals in general is you have to expect that you may need to reapply more often. You know, you're not going to find something that lasts for 20 hours nonstop, and that sort of is the same story with makeup or other categories as well. But it's not that big a deal.
So a lot of these additives are things that keep things going rather than things that actually do the work we're asking them to do.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. They're not per se the active ingredients that do something good, but something like, you know, phthalates in perfume, they hold the smell in the air. That's one of their uses. I think they have many uses. But so, yeah, if you use a natural perfume, it's not going to last all day and all night. But, you know, we go to the bathroom. You can add on a little bit more.
Jack and Patchogue, you have a question, Jack, about natural products from animals.
Yes, hello?
Yes. Jack, what's your question?
Yes, I had heard over the years, I know there's a lot of animal products in, like, lipsticks and whatnot. I had heard things as horrible as the oils and leftover renderings from euthanized animals. Is that is at all ever possible?
Siobhan, you're making a wonderful face. I don't know whether this is something you've heard about before, but it sounds like it's something.
This is new. This is new to me. That sounds awful. I don't have, but I can't really comment on that. I can't speak to it.
Yeah, I mean, we've definitely come across. There are sometimes strange animal ingredients. There are strange things in perfumes that we've read about, musks and whatnot. But, you know, there's so many things in there. We're talking about 12,000 ingredients in cosmetics.
12,000 ingredients.
Yeah.
And how many are tested? Are there some that actually have been tested?
12% is the number that has
12%
that has safety data
and the
by
rest
a publicly accountable health
just
agency.
Whatever we figure out for ourselves.
Major gaps.
Yeah.
Major gaps.
Were there sort of big companies that are paying attention to this sort of thing? Were there things? I know in the book, most of the things you recommend are small companies, things that, as you were saying, Siobhan, you can find in Whole Foods. Mm-hmm. But are there any of the large personal care products companies that are paying attention to these sorts of things?
They're definitely paying attention because they're starting to remove certain ingredients that are on the public's radar. But as we try to explain in the book, just because a shampoo takes out parabens, as an example, because that's something that seems to be more commonly known by people, that doesn't mean that it's a clean product. It's almost a sort of distraction tactic to say, oh, we don't have parabens, or we've reduced the sulfates, or these really specific claims.
So it's important what they don't say as well as what they do say.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, it's also, companies can put on the front of the bottle, they can put, I mean, not anything they want, but it's pretty loosey-goosey. So, you know, you can have something listed as organic, even if it isn't. It can say all natural. That doesn't mean anything in the words, according to the law. So, you know, sulfate-free or low sulfate. It's like, what is that? Yeah, what do these things even mean? It's trickery. It's marketing, you know.
I want to go to another question now. This is Diana in Manhattan. Diana, you had a question about mascara.
Yes, I did. A cosmetic chemist told me about 5 years ago, he worked for Maybelline. He told me that Great Lash Mascara contained lead, and many mascaras do. Is that true?
Good question.
Yes, I think that probably is true, though, you know, I wouldn't want to speak without a study on the books. But mercury also is one that is found in mascara. And lead and mercury in cosmetics often appear as contaminants. So this goes back to that same problem. You're not going to pick up your ingredients label and see lead in there. But, you know, just this last year, the FDA did a study of about 20-odd lipsticks and found lead in all of them. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, in meaningful amounts, because these are neurotoxins. So very small amounts affect things, especially like fetal development in pregnant women. You know, this is why we're so concerned about the mercury in fish. Well, the same argument applies to cosmetics.
Where do these contaminants come from? It sounds like these are more difficult because they're not things that people have to list on the ingredient list, and they don't have to test to figure out what's in there. So is it looking for a company that has particularly clean facilities, or could lead just be something that happens because of the way, you know, like lead in your pipes, that you have to run the hot water in an older house so that you don't get the lead in your pipes in your water?
That's a really good question that I don't know the answer to, actually.
Yeah, that's something. It's really confusing at what stage of the manufacturing process these things are getting in. And Maybe it's something we should look into and blog about soon.
Yeah, that's a good idea. One of the things I noted in the book, I mean, I said in the introduction, it made me very nervous, but it's also a lot of fun. You have struck a tone that's very lighthearted as you explore these things that can give many people shivers. Was that a really intentional approach on your part?
That's just how we are. We thought if we were going to do this, we might as well have fun with it. And it turned out it actually really was fun. You know, writing a book with your best friend and exploring all this stuff and like being able to sort of share it and find out things together and then share it with other women and men too. But yeah, it's...
I mean, the last thing we wanted to be was sort of preachy or self-righteous. That's
like not
scary. That's not what this book was about. And we also really didn't want to scare people because we didn't know ourselves until we had that hair treatment. So we didn't want, we knew how that could cause panic. So we definitely wanted to take a lighter approach. We just think that people should have the opportunity to know what's in their products and then make a choice for themselves. It's like if you want to drink or if you want to smoke or you want to do, if you want to eat McDonald's, at least you know that you're making a choice that might have ill effects on your body. But with cosmetics, people don't know.
There's an issue that you raise in the book, especially at the beginning, and you encourage readers to stick with it, about the idea of regulation. What did you find when you explored this idea of regulation for these things that we're putting on ourselves every day?
Well, right now, I mean, the FDA's Office of Cosmetics and Colors, which is the body that oversees cosmetics and all personal care products, they have an annual operating budget of about $5 million, and they have a staff of about 25.
For the 12,000 ingredients.
For the 12,000 chemicals and the $50 billion American market. We're talking $250 billion global market. So this is a tiny, tiny office, and that's, you know, the laws regulating cosmetics were written in 1938, and they haven't really changed very much. And cosmetics, as we know, change so much. I mean, there are new names and words all the time, like nanoparticle. We weren't talking about that a couple of years ago. So you have this, you know, this industry that's very innovative and growing by leaps and bounds every single year in terms of market and in terms of the things that they actually put out. And then you have this tiny little agency that's basically impotent. So, yeah, I mean, as it stands, the products that go to market are not tested or evaluated by the FDA before they hit the shelves.
And you have one story about, I think, was it Senator Kerry wrote a letter and the FDA wrote a letter and nothing happened?
And nothing happened.
What was that about? That was about a particular ingredient? Or
I think that was about, Alexandra, maybe you can jump in, but I think
I'm trying to remember if that was maybe about lipstick, which finally I might be wrong, but basically the environmental working group had done that study on lipsticks before, long, a year or two before the FDA did it, and they had found lead in lipstick. And finally the FDA succumbed to pressure from both politicians and the environmental working group to do their own study.
Yeah. Margaret,
we need all of these forces working together. We need it to come from consumers, and we need politicians like Kerry, like Jan Schakowsky, who are really fighting for this stuff.
Yeah, Margaret in Stanford, you have a question that relates to this.
Yes, I wanted to say that I've been using products from Europe, buying products, because I've read that the EU regulates their ingredients in their cosmetic and, you know, facial care products more than they do in the United States, and
mm-hmm.
That's a great point. The EU has banned about over 1,000 ingredients from their cosmetics, whereas the United States has only banned 8. So 8 out of 12,000 just seems a little bit fishy when you're playing the number game. That said, I don't think that European products are perfect either, because you still have this issue around fragrance, which is a serious thing. They still contain fragrance, I'm sure, and we don't know what's in those ingredients.
Well, thank you so much. I've been speaking with Siobhan O'Connor and Alexandra Spunt. They are the authors of No More Dirty Looks from DaCapo Lifelong Books.